The title of this message is David's Downside. Most people know about David. Does anybody know how many wives David had? Well, you'll find out in a second. Psalm 55, verses 12, 14, stand up. I'll read it to you. For it was not an enemy that reproached me, then I could have borne it. Neither was he that hated me that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him. But it was thou, a man mine equal, my guide and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked unto the house of God in company. You may be seated. King David is one of the great heroes of Israel. He was a shepherd who as a boy and young man killed a deer and a lion, protecting his flock. As a teenager, he slew the giant Goliath when there was no one in Israel's army who would even attempt the fighting. He was a loyal subject to King Saul, who refused to murder him when he had the chance, for he refused to kill the Lord's anointed. Then who is this psalm, Psalm 55, referring to in these verses? It was not a foreign enemy. It was not one that hated King David, but it was one at one time who took sweet counsel with him and one who walked in the house of God in company with him. Who was the enemy that David couldn't have tolerated? Was it someone from his own family? But first, we must get some background information on King David. How many wives did King David have? Did King David have one, two, or three wives? Most Christians know of the wife that he stole from one of his generals, but know little else about who his wives were. But King David had many wives. Deuteronomy 17:17 says, neither shall he, the kings of Israel, multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. Although King David had a multitude of wives, according to the Bible, only eight of them are named. Of the eight, five are mentioned only once. The other three wives figure prominently in the story of King David. David's first wife was Michal, the daughter of King Saul. Her story begins in 1 Samuel 18 and 19. Saul gave Michal to David to marry after David defeated 100 Philistines. He thought he would be killed, but he killed them all. But Saul, always fearful of young David's popularity with the people, planned to kill his new son-in-law. However, Michal, who loved David, warned him of the plot and helped him escape. After Michal successfully spoiled her father's plans, she was given to another man. But after David became king of Israel, Michal was given back as his wife the second time. She later despised David when she saw him dancing before the Lord. Michal had no children, perhaps in punishment for mocking the servant of the Lord. Or maybe it was reviving God's law of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. The story of David's second wife, Abigail, is told in 1 Samuel 25. She was originally the wife of Nabal, an evil man who disrespected David. In his anger, David planned to attack and kill Nabal and all his household. Abigail, a wise and prudent woman, met David as he and his men were approaching. She bowed down to him and convinced him not to seek revenge and cause bloodshed. David recognized that her good judgment was a gift to him from God. Abigail returned to Nabal and told him how close he had come to death. Nabal's, quote, heart died within him and he became as a stone, unquote. 10 days later, God struck Nabal and he died, and Abigail then became David's second wife. The sad story of David's third wife, Bathsheba, is well known. She was originally the wife of Uriah, a trusted soldier in David's army. While Uriah was away at war, David saw Bathsheba bathing in her courtyard one night. David should have been with his armed forces, but he made the mistake of staying behind. Bathsheba was beautiful, and David lusted after her. Even knowing that she was another man's wife, David summoned her to his palace and slept with her. When she found that she was pregnant, she informed David, and the king, rather than repent over his sinful actions, tried to cover his sin up. David ordered that Uriah be placed on the front lines of the battlefield, where he was to be abandoned by his fellow soldiers and killed by the enemy. Then David married Bathsheba, but their child died shortly after birth because of David's sin. David chronicled his sin and repentance over these evil acts in Psalm 51. David and Bathsheba had four more children, other than the child that died less than 8 days old: Shimeah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon. Their son Solomon ruled as king of Israel after his father's death. The other five named wives of David were Ahinoam, Maachah, Haggith, Abital, and Elah. David married more wives in Jerusalem, but how many is unknown. Well, if David had all these wives, how many children did he have? These are the named children, plus a little information about each of them. The first one is Amon, David's firstborn by his wife Adoham, who was a man of low character and driven by lust. He became obsessed with his half-sister Tamar and lured her to his room on false pretenses so he could rape her. He was later murdered in revenge by Tamar's full brother Absalom. Second child is Daniel. Nothing is known of David's second son, born to his wife Abigail. Absalom was third in line. Absalom is one of David's most notorious sons. A son of David's wife, Maachah, Absalom was hot-tempered and power-hungry. He planned out the murder of his half-brother Amon to avenge the rape of his sister, and then he plotted to steal his father's throne. He drew a following in Jerusalem, and David was forced to flee the city. To help complete his coup, Absalom had sex with David's concubines in view of everyone. He died in battle when Joab, commander of David's army, killed him as he helplessly hung by his long hair in a tree. The fourth son, Adonijah, David's fourth son by his wife Haggith, was handsome and undisciplined. He is known for a failed attempt to become king of Israel after his father died. Adonijah was eventually executed by his half-brother Solomon, the rightful king, for continued insurrection and attempts to steal the throne. The fifth son, Sephatiah, nothing is known of David's fifth son, born to his wife Abital. Ithram, nothing is known of this son by David's wife Eglah. Shimeah, a son of Bathsheba, David's seventh son, was born in Jerusalem, but nothing else is known of him. Shobab, another son of Bathsheba, nothing else is known about him. Nathan, David's eighth son, was also Bathsheba's, and nothing else is known of him. We can surmise that Nathan was named after the prophet Nathan, who had a long-term association with David. The tenth son, Solomon, David's most famous son, whose mother was Bathsheba. God chose Solomon to become the next king of Israel. God offered to grant Solomon anything he asked for. Solomon asked for wisdom to rule the people well. God was so pleased with Solomon's request that he granted the wisdom and gave him unmatched wealth and a long life. Solomon was the author of most of the Proverbs, the Song of Solomon, and the book of Ecclesiastes. David's remaining children were born in Jerusalem, but we don't know much else about them. The 11th son, Ibhar, 12th, Eli, Shema, and so forth. You can see the names. I doubt if you know any of the names that are up there. And the 20th child is Tamar. We do not know Tamar's position in the birth order, but we do know she was the daughter of Machah. We are told of her rape at the hands of her half-brother Amnon, and that afterwards she lived in isolation at her brother Absalom's house. 21st child, Jeremoth. David had a son who is mentioned in 2 Chronicles 11:18. It's not clear whether he is one of the sons mentioned above or using another name, or if he was one of David's sons by a concubine. And the 22nd and on, it's likely David had many more sons and daughters who were not recorded in Scripture, as he had more wives and concubines than the ones who are identified. 1 Chronicles 3:9, these were all the sons of David besides the sons of the concubine and Tamar, their sister. David, one of the greatest kings of Israel, if not the greatest, had more than 8 wives, an unknown number of concubines, over 22 sons and daughters. Question, was he a good husband to his many wives? And was he a good father to all his children? Does the high number of wives, concubines, and children that David had surprised you? How do you think his many relationships with his wives and his relationships with his children were? Do you think that he had as much success as he did in his military and political escapades? Do you think that you had more success or less success than David had in his marriages and children? Is your marriage better than any one of David's? Is the relationship you have with your children better or worse than the relationship David had with his many children? Do you think that your wife was better than any wife David had? Do you think that your parents did a better job of raising you than David did? Was your home life better or worse than what David provided? Have any of your children committed incest with the other one of your children? How would you handle that situation if it occurred? What if one of your children murdered the son who raped your daughter? How would you handle that situation? What if one son raped all the concubines, if you had any, and stole your position? How would you handle that situation? Children don't stay young. They grow up. They don't automatically believe what you have learned throughout the years. They must be taught and experience the consequences of sin. Don't let his job and his many wives and many children take away from his responsibilities of raising and teaching his children the law of God. Well, here's a brief review here. David's family. And this gives the wife's names. The first wife didn't have any children. That was from Saul. From Solomon came Joseph, and from Nathan came Mary. And then all these other wives are not named. And here's all the children from them. That's David's family. Do you know how many wives one of David's sons, Solomon, had? This one blows my mind. It said that Solomon, quote, had 700 wives and 300 concubines. How in the world do you have 700 wives? If one stayed with you one night a year, that would take over 2 years to stay with all 700 wives. And 300, I don't know, that guy was worse than Bill Clinton. Obviously, God allowed Solomon to have all these wives, but allowance is not the same as approval. Solomon's marital decisions were in direct violation of God's law, and there were consequences. But he is recorded in the Bible as having only 4 children. 700 wives and 300 concubines and 4 children. Why? He could have had as many as 5,000 children. One possibility is were they sacrificed according to Moloch. It doesn't give a reason, so we don't know why. One of his sons, Rehoboam, who was king of Judah, had 18 wives and 60 concubines. They bore him 28 sons and 60 daughters. Well, today's sermon will concentrate on two of David's sons and one of his daughters, Ammon, Absalom, and Tamar. Ammon's mother was Ahinoam, who came from the region of Jezreel. Absalom and Tamar's mother was the daughter of the king of Geshur. Now, where in the world is Jezreel? Where in the world is Geshur? I have a map to show you. Well, you can see Jezreel right here. There's Nazareth, Samaria. So it's in the northern part of the kingdom. There's That's where his wives come from. All right, next. There's Geshur. There's the Sea of Galilee. There's Manasseh. That's where Geshur was. So that's where Absalom and Tamar's mother came from. Amnon became determined to commit the awful sin of incest with his half-sister Tamar. Tamar was fair, which meant that she was very beautiful. 2 Samuel 13:1. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a very beautiful sister, whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now, there's a lesson to learn here. How many a young woman has grieved because she was not physically good looking? Many girls make mistakes, make themselves as attractive on the outside as they possibly can, but leave their insides in a deplorable mess. But good looks often prove to be a fatal snare. Many who are endowed with these attributes need to be doubly cautious, for they are targeted more often by lustful men than the average-looking girl. Men need to look for a woman who has strong Christian values on her inside rather than on her uncontrollable outside. Ammon was the king's oldest son, and therefore the one in immediate line for the throne, and probably the one that David loved the most. 2 Samuel 3:2. Unto David were born sons in Hebron, and his firstborn was Amnon of Anahel the Jezreelite. But Ammon had a strange desire. He was full of lust for the great beauty of his half-sister. He had the huge desire to sleep with her. But how was he to accomplish this? How would he get his half-sister in bed with him? It was a nephew of David who devised a cunning plan for Amnon to achieve his evil plan of incest. Amnon would first pretend to be sick and ask David for his half-sister to help him through his illness by serving him. This David did. God not only withheld from David Amnon's evil desire, but it was David, the father of both parties, who set them up for the eventual rape. For it was he who sent for Tamar. Sin's payment was just. As poor Uriah had been deceived by King David, now it was the king who was deceived by his own son. So Amnon, pretending to be ill, was served by his very beautiful half-sister. After a time, Amnon requested everyone to leave his room and to stay out except for Tamar. They were finally alone. Amnon had his opportunity. It was then that Amnon got up from his supposed illness, overpowered the virgin Tamar, and violently raped her. But this was only his first evil that Amnon did. The second was his refusal to take responsibility for his actions. Per God's law, Amnon would have been required to pay the bride price for his actions, but instead he treated his half-sister, a princess, as a common woman and forced her from his presence. 2 Samuel 13:15-17, and Amnon hated her, that's Tamar, exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, "Arise, be gone." And Tamar said to him, "There is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me." But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, "Put now this woman, Tamar, out from me, and bolt the door after her." That's something, isn't it? After this incident, Absalom comforted his sister Tamar and took financial responsibility for her, what Amnon should have done. He would even name his daughter after her. While her brother initially kept his feelings about the incident to himself, his heart was clearly calculating revenge. After the rape incident, King David was enraged, but did nothing to correct his son Amnon. No doubt, that only sparked a hatred towards King David, not only for failing to reprimand Amnon, but for allowing Tamar to serve Amnon in the first place. As the king, he was ultimately responsible for bringing order within his household. But while divisive on the battlefield, King David was resolute in his sons. Well, Absalom gets his revenge. So David withheld his reproof. Absalom took matters into his own hands. After 2 years of brewing in his anger, Absalom used the same cunning approach as his brother Amnon to lure him to his death. He convinced King David to encourage all his brothers, and he had a lot of brothers, to attend the festivities of sheep shearing, which was usually a time of unbridled hospitality and merriment. With all his brothers at the sheep shearing festivities, including his older half-brother, Absalom had instructed his men to kill Amnon. The plan was to get all the brothers drunk and then finally get revenge on Amnon for the rape of his sister. After his men killed Amnon, Absalom's brothers fled in fear. This detail also demonstrates the nature of the execution. These men were running from a gruesome scene where trained warriors just took out David's firstborn. After the incident, Absalom flees and seeks revenge from his grandfather, the king of Geshur, Tamlai, the son of Ammihud. In 2 Samuel 13, verses 34 through 39. But Absalom fled, and the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said unto the king, "Behold, the king's sons come, as thy servant said, so it is." And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of speaking, that behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept, and the king also and all his servants wept very sore. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. But the offspring of a political marriage has its advantages. While Geshur was likely a tributary of Israel under David's control, it does not seem that David demanded Talmai to hand over Absalom. Absalom was sheltered there for 3 years. Jonadab, the commander of David's army, convinced King David through a ruse to bring Absalom back to Jerusalem. And now we have to look at another map. Absalom flees to Geshur after killing Amon. So this is where they were sheep shearing. There's Jericho, Jerusalem, so it's right there. So Absalom goes all the way up, back up to Geshur. That's where he was from. And then Absalom, he goes to Jerusalem, then he went to Hebron. And from Hebron, he goes up to Jerusalem. And then David flees right over here. What was Joab's role? King David had three zealous nephews, his sister Zeruiah's sons, Ashiel, Abishai, and Joab. Renowned as three of David's mighty men, they were known for their fierce loyalty to Israel and strong will. Joab was the closest to David of the three, leading the Israelite army from the early days of David's reign up until his death. The life of Joab coincides with King David's, as recorded in 2 Samuel and 1 Kings. His name means, "My father is God." As a young man, Joab fought alongside David as one of his mighty men. After defeating the Jebusites and gaining control of Jerusalem, David appointed him as the commander of his army. Joab was an excellent military leader as both a skilled fighter and a tactful strategist. He is believed he never lost a battle and played a key role in establishing Israel as a powerful kingdom. Joab was loyal to his king and often counseled David on major decisions. He was one of few who would stand up to David and call him out when he was making poor decisions. However, Joab was ambitious and headstrong, causing him to disobey David's orders and on various occasions make selfish decisions. Joab's power, hunger, ambition was evident from early on. After his brother Ashiel was killed by Abner in battle, he wanted revenge. However, Abner sought an alliance with David, so Joab was commanded to let him live. But Joab murdered him in cold blood. Later on, Joab killed his cousin Amasa and did so by greeting him with a kiss. Also, as David was on his deathbed, Joab conspired to put his son Adonijah on the throne instead of Solomon, whom David had chosen. Yet, despite his flaws, Joab demonstrated commitment to protecting his king. When King David instructed him to have Uriah killed in battle, he did not question the king's motives, but strategically set up the battle so the king's plan would be fulfilled. In addition, he warned David his desire to do a census was sinful. However, David did not listen to him, so Joab obeyed his king and carried out the census. Only 70,000 men died because of David's sin. The sorrow of losing Absalom. The sorrow of losing Absalom was affecting the king's demeanor, but it may have also affected his ability to govern effectively. That might have driven Joab to push the king to bring his son back to Jerusalem. We will see Joab intervene again later when the king's grief after Absalom's death puts at risk the loyalty of his men. King David allows Joab to bring Absalom back to Jerusalem, but does not want him in his presence. Absalom is not satisfied with the arrangements, and after 2 more years, so it's 2 years after the murder, after the rape of his daughter, he kills Amon. Then he flees up to Geshur. He's there for 3 years. He comes back, and he doesn't see David for 2 years. Joab ignores Absalom, and in his response, Absalom orders men to burn Joab's fields. Absalom's actions were brazen, considering Joab was not a man many would cross. But he probably felt secure in his father's protection, who up to this point had not pursued any kind of punishment for Absalom's actions. The burning of the fields did indeed get Joab's attention, who subsequently arranged a meeting with the king. As a result, Absalom was welcomed back into the king's court. In chapter 15, Absalom's true intentions are revealed. His desire to return to court was not born of a love for his father, but to pull the kingdom from right under his feet. The first fruit in 2 Samuel 15 shows us just how self-absorbed Absalom was. 2 Kings 15:1, "And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him." Well, horses and chariots were not common in King David's army. The surrounding terrain was not conducive for chariot warfare because it lacked open plains. So for Absalom to acquire a chariot and horses was clearly more for pomp and circumstance. It could have also been part of his plan to gain favor among the people. It was against God's law for the king to have many horses. Deuteronomy 17:16, "But he, the king of Israel, shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that they should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said to you, you shall henceforth return no more that way." Absalom was a very handsome prince. Riding on a chariot might have helped him to elevate people's perception of Absalom. The Bible specifically mentions Absalom's good looks in 2 Samuel 14:25. "But in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crow of his head, there was no blemish in him." At the center of his political maneuvering was building popular support by directly engaging with the people. The growth of the kingdom and David's preoccupation with other matters likely led to a degradation in the daily administration of justice. Absalom seems to take advantage of the lack of justice at the town halls in ancient Israel. Through these daily interactions, he could feel the pulse of discontent among the common people and distrust of the king and his administration. The king's son built alliances with the tribe's elders. The presence of the king, or at least his loyal subjects, would have been expected at the gates. For Absalom to have been politically successful means that David and his men were regularly absent. At worst, David was aware but thought his son was working in the best interest of his kingdom and his reign. Regardless, Absalom was successful. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. While Absalom was able to build political alliances right under the nose of David in Jerusalem, building a formidable army from Jerusalem would have been more difficult. He would have had to contend not only with David, but with David's loyal, mighty men, particularly Joab and Benaiah. This is probably why Absalom, after building his political network for 4 years, decides to move operations to Hebron, the location where David began his reign. Under the guise of fulfilling a vow, Absalom obtains permission from King David to go to Hebron. While doing so, he sends secret messages to key figures throughout the tribes of Israel, people he handpicked during his political moving in Jerusalem. 2 Samuel 15:7-9. "And it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. And my servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king, David, said unto him, Absalom, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron." They were to proclaim the kingship in Hebron at the appointed time. In addition to the secret messages, Absalom makes two strategic decisions. The first was to invite 200 men to Hebron, which can only assume were men of importance within David's kingdom. The men instantly accepted the invitation. With this move, Absalom is further isolating David by stripping him of key players. He is also isolating these men so at the point of rebellion, they are unable to help David and likely forced to help Absalom for fear of their own lives. The second decision was to call for Anthipiel from his home city, Giloth. Anthipiel was a trusted counselor to David and would have had an insider's view of how David and his men operated. For him to join Absalom means he had ultimately betrayed his friend and King David. When David was briefed on the level of support Absalom had throughout Israel, he fled from Jerusalem. Absalom took Jerusalem without bloodshed, which is almost unbelievable considering the level of support David had from the army. Joab, the army commander, was still loyal to David. Absalom becomes king of Israel. So how exactly was Absalom able to achieve such a feat? The clue may lie in 2 Samuel 16:15. Now Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. The phrase "all the people" was used a few times in the records about David. Based on the evidence we have on how David's military was organized, all the people may be referring to the militia. This would have been David's reserve force. It was not certainly controlled like the regular army under Joab. The militia was trained at the tribal level, and their allegiance would have been to their local commanders. While Absalom was making allies at the gates, these local commanders and tribal leaders would have been natural targets for his political campaign. If Absalom had gained the support of the militia, a much larger force than the regular army, it'd be easier to see how it was not in David's favor to stand and fight within the walls of Jerusalem. The level of Absalom's depravity reached its peak when he not only slept with, or rather raped, David's concubines, but he did it in a very public manner. On the rooftop where David had lusted after Bathsheba, Absalom pitched a tent and violated David's concubines. In doing so, and by violating God's law, he guaranteed a permanent rift between himself and David. But the one who devised Absalom to commit such a heinous act was Ahithophel. What would have caused David's trusted advisor, Ahithophel, to turn so viciously against David? Biblical evidence suggests that Ahithophel might have been Bathsheba's grandfather. 2 Samuel 11:3. And David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" In 2 Samuel 23, verse 34b, Eliam, the son of Ithpel, the Gileadite. In the end, Absalom and Ahithophel were two men wronged by David. Ahithophel's granddaughter Bathsheba was abused by David, and Absalom's sister was abused by David's firstborn son, who was never held accountable by his father. Absalom's defeat begins at the hands of David, his father. David humiliated. 2 Samuel 16, 5-8, when King David came to Bahurim, behold, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed still as he came. And he cast stones at David, and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, thy bloody man, and thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. What would you do if you were David? You got your mighty men on both sides. This is one of the most untrue and unjust accusations in human history. Shimei knew full well what? Number one, that David had never shed one drop of blood of the house of Saul. Nor was, number two, his reigning in Saul's palace. And above all, three, God had nothing to do with delivering the kingdom of Israel to Absalom. David had spared the blood of Saul on two occasions. He had never deliberately hurt the house of Saul. And even in the case of Shimei's cursing, which deserved death, the king had mercy on him and kept him from dying on this and other occasions. David can only be considered a bloody man in the death of Uriah and shedding much blood in war. Here's the map. There's where David was. He's leaving Jerusalem, going up over here. He's being cursed. 2 Samuel 16, verses 9 through 10 says, Then said Abishai, the son of Shimei, one of the three mighty men who were nephews of David, unto the king, Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. And the king said, What have I to do with you, you sons of Zimri? So let him curse. Because the Lord has said unto him, Curse David. Who shalt thou say, Wherefore hast thou done so? This well meant, but fleshly suggestion of David's devoted follower reminds us of that request of Christ's disciples concerning those who did not receive him. Namely, Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elijah did? As Christ answered, you know not what manner of spirit you are of. So David restrained Abishai, clear proof he was not the bloody man Shimei had called him. David refused to return railing for railing, reminding us of when he, Christ, was reviled, he reviled not again. He left us this example for us to follow. Well, what did David do? While Absalom had attained Athaniel's allegiance as counselor, David sent his friend Hashai to infiltrate Absalom's inner circle. Absalom did initially question Hashai, yet his overconfidence in his ability to turn so many against his father probably blinded him to Hushai's true intentions. This error in an otherwise brilliant political maneuver would cause Absalom the war and his life. When Absalom asked Athaniel for next steps, he advised Absalom to pursue King David and his men at once. Athaniel wanted to take 12,000 men to overtake David. It was a sound strategy, as David and his men would be weary, weakened, with little access to provisions. They were on the run, and Absalom had the initiative. But Absalom insisted on hearing Hushai's counsel as well. Hushai naturally countered Athaniel's advice. He played on the reputation of David and his mighty men's experience living and fighting on the run. He convinces Absalom that if he would send men, they would be on a fool's errand, searching aimlessly for men who knew how to run and hide. And at the first moment that Absalom's men would fall to a surprise attack, it would demoralize his forces. Instead, he suggested Absalom build up his forces and hit David with overwhelming power. Absalom played right into his hands. While Absalom gathered his forces, as advised by Hushai, King David was able to obtain provisions, refresh, and organize his men. They were also able to choose the place of battle, the forest of Ephraim, an ideal location when going up against a larger force. The rough terrain was not suited for shoulder-to-shoulder fighting common in ancient warfare. The scripture, 2 Samuel 18:8, itself says, And the forest devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. But it would have played in the favor of David's more experienced men. In the fog of war, the handsome and prideful Absalom met a humiliating end. While riding his donkey, probably on the run from David's men, his hair got caught on the branches of a great oak tree. The donkey fled, leaving Absalom hanging from his locks. Now David had given orders that his son was to be spared. However, Joab, probably knowing full well David's inability to see things clearly when it comes to his children, disregarded David's order. It was not the first time, and it wouldn't be the last. So while Absalom's hanging on the tree by his hair, Joab spears Absalom three times where he hung. Few men are both great politicians and great warriors. King David was one of those men, and Absalom aspired to be one as well. Absalom, through political schemes and deceit, was able to pull the kingdom from right under his father's feet. It is difficult to ascertain if this initial success was certain he was a better politician or because David was blinded by his sons. Regardless, in the end, King David proved to be the more cunning leader, outwitting his son in the end and thoroughly defeating his forces in battle. Absalom learned a long lesson. One can't win the war if God is not on his side. Poetically, Absalom's hair, a visible representation of his vanity, was also his undoing. As he hung from that oak tree, the uselessness of pride was on full display. With no mercy, Joab speared the helpless Absalom. With the same callousness that Absalom used to kill Amnon and rape innocent women, he too was cut down. Justice found him in the thick woods of Ephraim. My conclusion. David was a man after God's own heart. But after a good beginning, he faltered along the way. His many wives and many children proved a downfall in many cases. How he repented of his sins, how he understood the consequences of his sins, was what made David an unusual man. Now we have a little chart. David, here's all his wives. Here's all his children. Solomon, Nathan becomes Jesus Christ. And here's the rebellion of Absalom. Who would want to trade places and be King David? Who would want to learn all the hard lessons that he learned? A few might, but I think most of us would rather live our own lives without all the drama that David had. To be a great hero of Israel, one must experience a lot of disappointment and hardships. He had to experience the consequences of his sin and sins. He experienced a lot of great victories when he was young. He killed Goliath the giant when no one else would take on the champion of the Philistine army. He withheld his chance to murder the king after he was anointed as the next king because he did not want to touch the Lord's anointed. He led Israel into many glorious military victories. But his life paralleled events like the life of the patriarchs. Take, for example, the life of Jacob. His twin brother Esau despised the covenant and interracially married. He received the covenant blessing instead of his twin brother, given by his father by deceit. He had to go about 500 miles to find a woman to marry of his own kind. His wedding night, I don't think anybody experienced this. His wedding night, his wife's older sister, Leah, was secretly substituted in place of his wife. He had to serve another 7 years before he was allowed to marry his true wife, Rachel. He was gone 20 years in his wife's country, during which time his mother died. He was attempted to be murdered by his twin brother when he returned home. His daughter, Dinah, was raped. He had been angered by the rash decisions in which Simeon and Levi had avenged their sister. His son, Judah, had run off and taken residence with a Canaanite woman and had three sons with her. His son, Judah, was then deceived by a pretending prostitute and gave him two more sons. His eldest son, Reuben, sinned against him by sleeping with one of his concubines, Bilhah. His favorite wife, Rachel, shortly after she had given birth to his youngest son, Benjamin, died. His oldest son, Joseph, by Rachel, was esteemed to have been killed, and he never knew that his other sons had lied to him about what had happened. His whole family, despite his great wealth, ran out of food during a severe famine and were about to starve to death. His whole family eventually, when he was old, moved to Egypt where he died. David committed a gross sin, and he suffered the rest of his life over the results of this sin, which led to other sins. His family life was lacking in the love and instruction that should have been given to his children and wives. Modern Christians should take note of this and consider what Jacob and David had suffered when they themselves agonize and languish, because having the promise of God obviously does not make anyone immune to suffering. None of us are better than Jacob and David, who continue to trust in God regardless of their suffering. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel